Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is tax advisor Russell Fox. He comes on our show every couple times a year and shares with us tax information. There have been a lot of questions from our listeners recently, and we're going to put him to the test. Russell Fox, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Glad to be back.
In case you hadn't heard, there was an election a few weeks ago.
There was one a few years ago, too.
Were there any major tax laws passed during the election that we should be concerned with?
Well, the election did have what appears to be a new president-elect, Joe Biden. However, the Democrats, thinking they were going to win the House, more seats, actually lost seats in the House. Their majority will be the smallest in a long, long time, maybe as few as 5 votes, meaning in the House, it's going to be very hard to pass legislation without Republican support. In the Senate, right now the Republicans have won 50 seats, with 2 Georgia Senate races going to a runoff on January 5th. It's more likely than not that the Republicans will maintain holding the Senate. What this all means is that nothing is likely to change through 2022 and probably 2024 with divided government. In other words, the tax laws we have, probably going to have for the next 4 years.
Okay. So on the national level, that's the case. There were presumably several tax bills in the various states. We haven't all sorted that out yet, but
there definitely were. Probably because of the pandemic, a lot of our voters were not in the mood for increased taxes. Illinois had a proposal to have a progressive income tax. It failed badly, even though the governor spent $50 million of his own money to try to get it passed. Colorado had a measure to decrease the tax rate slightly. It passed. So Colorado, which has a flat income tax rate, it'll be slightly less going forward. California had a measure to have a split roll property tax where owners of commercial property would pay more. It failed. And that was pretty much the story in most states. The exception was Arizona. Arizona passed a high income, a tax increase for those making very high incomes in the $300,000-$400,000 range or more. So those individuals in Arizona will be paying more in income tax.
Very good. Let's get to another question from our listener. Is there a way around the self-employment tax for professional gamblers, like perhaps a group of us forming an LLC and saving all that 15%?
Well, mostly that's called tax evasion, which I try to avoid. Unfortunately, professional gambler owes self-employment tax. That is one of the drawbacks of being a professional gambler. You're earning your living doing something. In the U.S., if you're doing that, you owe self-employment tax. Now, you can get around this, but there's some big buts. First, forming an LLC and using the default method of taxation does not change anything. Partnerships don't pay tax. The partners do. Everything flows through to the partners. Gambling income on a partnership is not ordinary income. It's other income, just like it is for an individual. So nothing's going to change there. You can, though, form a single-member LLC and make a tax election for the LLC to be taxed as an S-corporation, and that can work to avoid self-employment tax. But there are a lot of caveats. First, the IRS has never blessed a professional gambler filing as an S-corp, and it's possible that they would fight this if it ever got into audit. Second, all S-Corp owners who participate and own a business must be paid a reasonable salary. And that's based on the facts and circumstances of the business. Zero is not reasonable if you're making money. Salary here is wages. It's going to be a W-2. Basically, the corporation or LLC taxed as a corporation is going to be employing you. Tax savings in this situation is on the excess of net income to wages. It's a savings on what would have been self-employment tax. Additionally, this may not be legal under your state law. Many states do not allow LLCs for professionals. And so this is something you absolutely need to check with an attorney in your local jurisdiction. Many corporation laws, state corporation laws, do not allow any corporation in the business that's against public policy. And gambling is against public policy in most states. It's even against public policy in California, where California has lots of legal gambling. So it's essential you need to speak to a tax professional and an attorney if you want to go this route and know the caveats.
So, Russell, just to follow up, this would be the exact same thing for, say, an accountant or a chiropractor or a dentist. They would have this same issue, right?
Yes and no. The IRS, though, has blessed specifically doctors forming corporations. Okay?
Okay. But not an individual doctor.
Yes, they have.
Oh, okay.
I have some doctors who have their own S-Corp for their practice. But it generally, the issue is there. The doctors tend to employ people.
Right.
There tends to be a business reason. One of the things in taxes, everything has to have an economic basis besides just saving tax. Now, I happen to agree with where you're going that if a professional golfer can incorporate, I can't see why a professional gambler can't. If a doctor can, why can't a professional gambler? Just realize the IRS has an institutional bias against gambling, and I could see them fighting this.
Okay, let's go on to a different subject. If you make your living making gambling videos using your own money on slots and table games and posting them on YouTube, I assume you'll be able to deduct the flights to Vegas or wherever, hotel stays, food, rental cars, but will you be able to deduct gambling losses beyond the casino win-loss statements or gambling logs, the amount you lost making these YouTube gambling videos?
You can only deduct gambling losses in excess of winnings. Excuse me, you cannot deduct gambling losses in excess of winnings, and that's per the Internal Revenue Code, Section 165D. So this is based on an overall year. So it's possible you'd be able to deduct gambling losses, possible you wouldn't. Now, it may be possible to have a unified gambling business. All of this run through one Schedule C. If you're a professional gambler making gambling videos, but that's something you need to discuss with your tax professional, whether it's one business or two businesses. As far as deducting the business expenses, of course, you're always allowed, this is written in a tax code, to deduct anything that is both necessary and ordinary as a business expense for you to earn income.
Okay. Next question. I have a question about a recreational player hitting a large jackpot and the tax implication. He's a quarter video poker player that will occasionally play triple play, double super times pay. If he hits the 20X dealt royal for $60,000, how would you recommend I stay in compliance with taxes and don't get hit with an underpayment penalty? I don't play nearly enough to offset a win like that, and my wife and I are standard deduction filers, as we don't have enough write-offs, even with a large gambling loss write-off, to get past $24,000. Would a 1040 ES form and payment for, say, $18,000 be the appropriate method to pay my owed taxes and remain in compliance? The casino I typically play at is an Indian casino in Oklahoma and will not take out taxes when you win.
Well, it's also, it's possible this listener does not even have to make an estimated tax payment. Estimated taxes are based on the lesser of 100% of prior year tax, 90% of current year tax, or based on your year-to-date income through each tax period end, end of March, May, August, and December. So if, for example, this listener has a day job and is, you know, has normal withholding, and that withholding is equal to or exceeds the prior year tax, he does not need to make estimated tax payments, even though his tax is going way up in this scenario. Otherwise, you just make an estimated tax payment based on what tax bracket you think you're going to be in, and $18,000 on $60,000 seems reasonable. Additionally, state estimated tax payments must also be made. Don't forget, they want their money too.
Yeah, for those of you who are worried about this jackpot, it has to be a dealt royal, which is 1 in 650,000 hands, and you have to have a multiplier, which is 1 in 15. So round numbers, you're going to get this every 10 million hands. So, yes, it can happen.
And we can all dream, Bob.
And it certainly does happen to some people that you read about, but it ain't going to happen to you. Well, it probably is not going to happen to you.
The listener probably wants it to happen to him. If you get lucky, it'd be a very good thing.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun figuring out what the maximum could be without being too concerned with how improbable that is. Next question. Is there a way to deduct bad debt on a Schedule C related to a former team that I invested in and played on? My initial investment and gains that were owed to me from the team bank were never paid after leaving the team.
Well, probably not as far as the bad debt. And that's because most taxpayers are what we call cash basis. With cash basis, you recognize income when you receive it, and you recognize expenses when you spend it. Since you never recognize the income, you don't have any bad debt. If the taxpayer happens to be an accrual basis taxpayer, where you recognize income when you invoice, and you recognize expenses when you receive the invoice, yes, there would be bad debt. Now, it may be possible to take a bad debt loss, which would probably be a personal bad debt taken on Schedule D for the actual investment. But I'd need some more details to know for sure.
Is that an automatic audit when you do that?
No. I've had clients do it. A lot depends on the dollar amount, but personal bad debt is an allowed capital loss. It's in the tax code. You know, you have to have proof. I'm going to assume that this individual has proof that he invested whatever with this team. And he'd have to, you know, also have proof he never got paid. But that part probably very simple and very easy.
Proving a negative is easy?
Bank statements. If you can show all of your deposits are not from this team, should be pretty straightforward.
Okay. Next question. How do foreigners, perhaps from Australia, pay taxes for winnings in the United States? Can they file as professional gamblers?
Well, first, any Australian who hits something which is going to cause a W-2 is going to face 30% withholding. The U.S.-Australia tax treaty specifies that. Basically, there are a bunch of countries where the U.S. and those countries have negotiated away having withholding. Australia is not one of them. So an Australian who hits a video poker jackpot for, say, $2,000 is not going to receive $2,000. He's going to get what is called a Form 1042-S, and he's going to receive 70% of that $2,000 or $1,400. The 1042-S is going to note that there has been withholding of $600, 30%. A professional gambler from Australia, in theory, if he is conducting business in the U.S., can file as a professional gambler and might be able to get some of that money back. There are issues, though, in doing that. You have to be able to show you're conducting a business in the U.S. Additionally, Australia does not tax amateur gamblers for their winnings. They do tax professional gamblers. So the one issue here is, does a professional gambler from Australia, who is not filing as such, want to suddenly declare that he is a professional gambler in the U.S.? Because the U.S. and Australia do exchange information. Doing that might cause major issues with his Australian tax returns.
Yep. They get you with the right hand or the left hand. Take your pick. Next question. For those gamblers that maintain a chip bank, which I assume means uncashed casino chips from a variety of casinos, if we have not cashed the chips in, do we have to declare the winnings that we're keeping in the chip bank as income for tax purposes? It would seem that until we cash them in, any number of things could happen to preclude them from being actual income. For example, the casino could deny paying out the chips because you did not prove that you won them in their casino, or you could lose them back at the casino during your next session of play, other things.
Well, whether it's a chip bank, a player's account, something else I've seen, the answer is very easy. It is yes. You must declare this. There's a rule in tax called constructive receipt. With constructive receipt, when income is put into you, in other words, you are receive income, or it's separated for you, and you have the ability to turn it into cash, it's income. So an example in my situation is, let's say I receive a check in the mail on December 27th, and I elect, I'm not going to the bank right now. There's COVID, there's whatever. Let's just let that check wait a week until next year so I don't have to declare it as income. No, it's income for me because I could have deposited it. This is black and white tax law. There is not a way around this issue.
So if that's true, does that mean, let's say that I win $10,000 in chips and I declare it, and now the casino, you know, changes management, they change the chips, and by the time I get back there, they say, we are no longer accepting these chips. Can I now write that off as a $10,000 loss?
In that specific situation, yes, because you declared the income. And unlike the previous situation where we had a bad debt from a team, here you declared the income. So you can have bad debt if those chips are no longer good. Now, the problem, again, though, is going to be, from your standpoint, proving it, because you could have, you know, when a casino, for example, changes its chips, they have to publish notices. It's not as if you're not informed, and it makes big news when this happens. Additionally, there's a current case going through the Nevada regulators regarding a casino not accepting like 5K chips. And I saw somebody sent me a piece of information on it that the Nevada gaming authorities are saying casinos got to, even though the person can't give the proof of what day he won it, the fact that he's won plenty of money at the casino has to cash that chip.
Yeah, that was a Bob Nersessian case that he's been on the show to discuss that. Yeah, that he won that case.
Let's
but But just from a practical standpoint, when you say you'd have a hard time proving it, I mean, I can just write it in my gambling log, right? Today, $10,000 loss. You know, I don't have to specify in my gambling log, or I mean, how would they even know one loss from another?
Well, in your gambling log, you're supposed to note the casino name, game you're playing, start and end time, and result. So sure. Ignoring the casino is first not part of a good gambling log. Second, on with this kind of issue, remember, you have those chips.
Yeah.
Okay. You can always lie. Okay. I really don't want to go down that path of discussion of, you know, things that are illegal ways of avoiding taxes. There are plenty of those. If you want to do illegal activities, do a search on the internet. There's lots of information about people, and mostly it's people who've gotten in trouble.
Staying on this subject, as a video poker player, casinos, many casinos give you points which can be redeemed for cash or free play. And my practice has been, let's say I had $3,000 worth of accumulated points at the end of the year. If I've had a losing year, I will cash those all in. If I've had a winning year, I will not cash them in and record them as income when I actually download them on the machine to play them. Are you telling me today that what I'm doing is technically illegal?
No. It's a little bit different here because we're not talking dollars. Okay. Points are marketing gifts to you. When you turn them into cash, it is clearly income, and arguing otherwise is a waste of time. But if you have points and want to save them up, because there are good economic reasons to do so, you can.
Okay, and even if my main reason is tax avoidance, there are other reasons that I could use, such as, well, I get a discount at the restaurants if I use the points there, and that's sufficient to make it a good reason.
Yes, it's equivalent to, like, in this case, like airline miles, where it takes 30,000 miles to get that trip to Rio and 3,000 miles to get the trip to Riverside. Well, I'd rather go to Rio. So I want to save those, and it's completely allowed. And additionally, when you use them in, when you use points in certain ways, they're not income to you. If you use them, for example, for a free meal, the IRS does not really want you to declare $30 for the meal. If you turn them into cash, though, anything you turn into cash is income, always.
Okay, you mentioned a trip to Rio. If you use airline miles for a free trip somewhere, is that considered income?
The IRS tried to do that in late 80s or early 90s. I forget when, but it was a front page story on the Wall Street Journal. The next day, the congressional phone system broke due to phone calls. The IRS rescinded that and said, we've decided not to pursue that. Turning airline miles into anything except cash is not income.
Good. As far as I'm concerned, that's the right answer. All right. Here's a general question. Somebody wants to know some of the biggest mistakes people can make regarding taxes. Non-gambling, just in general.
Mistakes numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 out of a top 10 list is not keeping good records. By far, keep good records. This means First, you should keep your tax returns themselves and proof of filing forever. Yes, forever. Reason for that is, I've had clients who have been accused of not filing ancient tax returns. I've had somebody from state of California came after him for a 1976 tax return.
Wow.
Okay, well, and we ended up having to, generate a 1976 tax return. And it turns out he would have gotten a refund, and most likely he did way back then. But if you don't file, the statute of limitations runs forever. So you should keep your tax return with proof of filing forever. You need to keep your backup information beyond the extended statute of limitations. If you're a Nevada resident, that means 7 years. Some states have longer extended statutes of limitations. California, the statute is 8, meaning you should keep your records for 9 years. Keeping your records means actual receipts. A credit card statement that says that you spent $200 on Southwest Airlines just shows you spent $200. It's not good enough for a business expense. It doesn't show who traveled. It could have been a gift. It could have been a gift card. It could have been anything, not necessarily your business travel. A credit card statement, for example, American Express does this, that actually shows what the travel was used for will be sufficient. But otherwise, you need the actual receipts. We recommend you scan them because a lot of receipts fade after time, and scanned records are just fine. You need to check to make sure you can retrieve them. Data stored is useless if you can't get it back. And so we strongly recommend you back all this stuff up. If you're using computer records, one of my axioms is your computer will crash at the least opportune moment. So make sure you have good backup. Storage is very inexpensive these days. The other thing people should do is, with taxes, plan ahead. Don't wait to the last minute. When I get off this call, I'm going to be preparing somebody's 2019 tax return. Yes, the deadline was over a month ago, but he thought that COVID delayed it. It didn't. So starting early is a good idea. This also means you should keep your records, if you're keeping your log, as you're going, not waiting till the end of the year to do it.
So that was 1 through 9 was keeping records. What was 10?
10 is plan ahead and, work early. Taxes at the last minute are a pain in the neck. Taxes done on a timely basis, yeah, it's annoying and still a pain in the neck, but you're not having an annoyance all at once. It's spread out.
So given that we're coming toward the end of the year, and we want to plan ahead, is there anything we can do before December 31st that will help us in paying our taxes for 2020?
There are definitely things that everyone should look at. And obviously, your income is what it is. If you have a day job and you're getting a W-2 and you're making whatever, that's your income. But most people have other things that are going on. As we age, our tax situations tend to get more complex. Something to look at, which we recommend for everyone, is look at your capital gains and losses for the year. Let's say that this has not been a good year for you in the stock market. Maybe you want to take some capital gains, those losses are going to offset them, and realize them. Let's say you've invested in this great startup and you're up $10,000 in it, and you have $12,000 of other capital gains. Well, if you take that $10,000 of capital gains and immediately buy back your position, you still own it, and you're not going to be paying tax on it because the capital losses will offset them. Additionally, the opposite situation, you have a lot of capital gains from, let's say you did sell that position in the startup, but you have some dogs. Well, maybe taking some of those losses to offset those gains. These all have to be transactions that are done by year end. A second thing this year especially is to look at potentially converting retirement accounts into Roth accounts. If this year has not been a very good year income-wise, maybe you want to consider converting a traditional IRA or a 401k plan that you have outstanding into a Roth plan. The difference with a traditional IRA, when you make contributions, they're tax deductible. When you take money out, they're taxed. With a Roth, when you make contributions, there's no tax change. When you take money out, you are not taxed on it. Roth IRAs have an income restriction. However, you're always allowed to convert a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. And traditional IRAs for this purpose also include SEPs and simple plans. So it's something to look at, to talk to your own tax professional about, but it's a good strategy to consider.
Can you partially convert it?
Yes.
Here's another question. Can I take an actual stock and put it into my Roth rather than having to sell it and then buy it again in the Roth?
No, you cannot. You can only make cash contributions into IRAs. The exception is if you convert an IRA account. Let's say you convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, whatever in that account converts.
Very good. We're talking with Russell Fox on taxes. We're going to take a brief commercial break, and afterwards, we're going to talk about what to do if you've hit a jackpot and you have not been keeping good records. The South Point has more than 10,000 gains, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. In November, the promotion is half-price Amazon or Walmart cards. Normally, you can redeem 8,334 points for $25 cash or free play, which is a 0.3 rate. This month, you can earn and redeem this many points for a $50 gift card. In the past, there's a limit of 10 cards per person per month. This time, the limit is 12 cards. Assuming you value these gift cards the same as cash, this means for the first $100,000 of coin in November, you have a 0.6 slot club rate. It's official that the normal semester of video poker classes starting in January or February has been canceled due to COVID concerns. We're optimistic that we'll be able to continue these classes in September of 2021. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political happenings, mostly but not entirely in the United States. The election is over, so a high percentage of their active markets about who was going to win have been closed. Now the markets are on who's going to be in the cabinet and what's actually going to happen when the Electoral College meets. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. VideoPoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week? Lucky Eights. This is a rare case where a video poker game has the same name as a table game side bet. It is a 10 coin per line game where you get bonuses for three or more eights, including full houses with three eights. If you get dealt trips or higher, about every 35 hands, you get to spin the wheel, which includes amounts ranging from 188 to, very occasionally, 18,888. Induces wild variation, you spin the wheel on dealt flushes or higher, which occur every 42 hands on average. You need to figure out the strategy for yourself, but it appears to be possible with simple algebra. With 88445, for example, it must be correct just to hold the eights because of the bonuses on three or more eights. Induces wild variations where you would normally hold a suited Jack 10, 9 over a pair of eights. In this game, surely holding the eights is better. All right, we're back to Russell Fox. And our question deals with not keeping records, which violates 1 through 9 of a preceding list that we had. Somebody says, not a professional gambler, and in February got a hand pay on a slot machine, so of course there's a tax form with that. Overall, sure he's a loser in 2020. Only talking about gambling, certainly in life as well. What do I need to do to show my tax preparer so that this hand pay and my losses cancel out? Russell.
Well, first, today is a good day for this listener to start his gambling log. Okay? You really, really need to do your own log. The regulations on this were issued in the 1970s. There isn't much of an excuse. And the tax court, if this ever got to tax court, would say the same thing. There is no excuse. Gambling log is pretty basic. You just need to note the date, the casino name, game you're playing, as simple as like NSUD, not so ugly deuces, start time, end time, and your result. You should keep your own log and get the win-loss statements. Now, having said that, the IRS loves paper trails. They will generally accept win-loss statements more than gambling logs, even though every win-loss statement has a disclaimer at the bottom saying you shouldn't use it for tax purposes because it might not be 100% accurate. But the IRS will generally accept them. So if your win-loss statements, for example, show that you're an overall loser, I, as a tax professional, will accept them because the IRS generally will accept them. So having said that, though, start keeping a gambling log.
Now, one can cherry pick win-loss statements. In other words, if you play at four casinos and at two of them you're a net winner and two of them you're a net loser, and we only show you the two for net losers, that would be
illegal.
Well, certainly withholding useful information, leading our honest tax preparer into making a fraudulent claim, perhaps.
Well, when you look at Form 1040 at the bottom, and I'm going to go down to the actual language, you sign it under penalties of perjury. I declare that I've examined this return and accompanying schedules and statements, and to the best of my knowledge and belief, they are true, correct, and complete. Declaration of preparer, other than taxpayer, is based on all information of which preparer has any knowledge. So if you have four win-loss statements and only provide me two, far as I know, it's right. Okay, I put the two on there. In our engagement letter, and this is true of almost every tax professional I've seen, it says you're going to provide me with all your information and not cherry pick.
I just want to say also, for the listener who submitted that question, the other tremendous benefit of keeping those records is if you're a recreational player, then at the end of the year, you can see how much your recreational play is costing you. And for many people, once they realize how much money they're actually losing in a year, it could stop you from being that recreational player, which would be, you know, really beneficial for your finances.
Next question. If you file as a professional gambler, do you still need to list each W-2G?
No. You do not have to list out every W-2G. We do recommend, in fact, you keep add to your return a subschedule that says W-2Gs, $40,000, other gambling winnings, $30,000, total $70,000. The 40 in this case would be the total of your W-2Gs. In the instructions for form W-2G, which you can look at on the IRS website, it says that a professional gambler includes his total W-2Gs, or his total of W-2Gs, on his Schedule C. so you don't have to list them all out. You should make sure, though, that that total is correct. For obvious reasons, the IRS loves to match stuff.
Correct or higher?
Correct or higher. If you put down a total of 50,000 of W-2Gs and it's 47, the IRS won't question it. If their total W-2Gs are 50 and you put down 47, the IRS will question it. All I can say is it should be accurate.
Yeah, in my case, the numbers are quite a bit different than that. Assuming I had a year where I won 100,000, which certainly doesn't happen all the time, I would put W-2Gs of 600,000, other gambling minus 500,000. It's 'cause certainly we don't make near what the W-2Gs are.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Okay. Can a professional gambler with an S-Corp start a solo 401k and put bankroll money in there and borrow from it to play, essentially paying himself interest in a tax-deferred account? Can you do the same with a SEP IRA?
Well, the answer is the same for both, no and no. A bunch of issues here. First, a professional can start a retirement account such as a solo 401k or SEP IRA. If they're through an S-Corp, that is going to be based on the wages they are being paid. It will be an S-Corp issue. It will be an S-Corp deduction, not taken on the personal tax return. Second, all retirement accounts have a rule that you can't self-deal. And this would clearly be self-dealing. You're using the money for yourself. That is not allowed. Retirement accounts such as SEPs, solo 401ks, are for investments. And this is not one. Additionally, withdrawals from retirement accounts are taxed. And you pay a penalty tax if the withdrawal is for a non-prescribed use, which this absolutely would be. So this is a definite do not do.
I have a question not on the list. What can you do with a 529 if the person is no longer planning to go to school?
Okay, 529 plan's an educational fund that's allows contributions and growth. Like an IRA, it's not taxed, but there's no deductions when you put the money in it. That's for the benefit of the listeners wondering what that is. You have two choices. You can change beneficiaries. So let's say you have this for your son. Well, you could change the beneficiary and have it for your daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter.
For myself? So that's,
you can have it for yourself and change it to yourself, yes. Remembering, though, the prescribed use for it is for educational purposes. The second thing is you can take the money out for non-prescribed use, and there's a tax issue there. But you can do that, just like, you know, you can withdraw money from an IRA before retirement. You can do this. You can take money out of a 529 plan. Let's say, well, I have one child. My child didn't need the money. He got a full scholarship to wherever he's going. So what am I going to do with that? I might as well spend it on me. You can do that.
I remember hearing something, maybe this never passed, but I remember at one point they were talking about the idea of being able for like a first-time home buyer to use the money for that. Are there any exceptions that are not taxed?
If it is, the one exception is you can change beneficiaries to somebody else for that person's education. Otherwise, when you take the money out, there's a tax coming because it's not being used for education. Okay. Nothing that I know of has caused this to change.
How serious is the definition of education? For example, if somebody wanted to take an online course of how to be a clown, and it costs $500. Is that an educational expense?
Educational expenses for this situation are from a college that is or educational institution that issues a Form 1098-T. Those are issued by, you know, most major schools, but probably not the online clown college. It does not have to, though, be tuition and fees for a 529 plan. It's pretty much anything related to that, to be tuition, fees, books, room and board. Room and board is generally not a qualified educational expense, but for 529 plans, it is. But not the online clown college that is not a qualified educational institution.
Okay. Somebody wants to deposit a large sum of cash without raising any unnecessary flags. Is the best way, he wants to know what's the best way to have banks avoid closing accounts for cash transactions. Specifically, is it better to do 10 $10,000 transaction or one $100,000 transaction?
Go big. Do not split deposits. Especially, do not split deposits under $10,000 to avoid currency transaction regulations. That is a crime. So if you have, it is structuring. If you have a $90,000 deposit, do a $90,000 deposit. Just realize a couple things. If you're in an area outside of Las Vegas, it is probably going to mean an extra 30 minutes to an hour at your bank, because they'll be on the slightly clueless side on how to deal with that much cash. Okay, and that's normal. And they're going to count it probably twice and probably by hand to make sure it's right. Currency transaction reports in Las Vegas, most banks in Las Vegas are very familiar with them. Banks outside of Las Vegas are much less familiar with them. Second, you're probably going to be asked what it's from. And something to do is, you know, first, lying to a bank is a felony. Don't do that. So you might want to say, I got lucky and won this at a casino. It's completely allowed. Just whatever. Don't structure. Now, the last thing I want to point out on this, there are some banks that are institutionally against gambling. I do not care to name names. But if you do a search on some individuals from, for example, in the poker world, like Daniel Negreanu, you can find some history on him in a certain bank where his bank, that particular bank closed his accounts because he was a professional gambler, mind you, a successful one. So just be aware there are some large banks to avoid if you are going to have gambling activity.
Okay, our last question. Do you, Russell Fox, know how to legally set up an offshore corporation that can invest seven figures in the stock market and grow bankrolls without paying any taxes on the capital gains until he spends them?
No. That's the short answer. I do know. First of all, I'm an enrolled agent, federally licensed tax professional. I don't set up business entities. But I have clients who own parts to all of foreign entities. There are a ton of tax reporting in this area. First, if you invest in a non-U.S. corporation, you have to note that investment on IRS Form 926. If you own part of a non-U.S. partnership, there's a similar form. Additionally, if you own a non-U.S. corporation, you're going to probably have a requirement to file Form 5471, another reporting form. Globally low-taxed income, what we call tax world GLITI, and subpart F income, such as dividends and capital gains, is generally taxed by the U.S. even when you own it in a foreign corporation. This could also be what is called a passive foreign investment company, a PFIC, which has special taxation rules where you file yet another IRS form, Form 8621, and generally you're going to be paying tax on an ongoing basis. I'm just scratching the surface here. There's tons of legal requirements, FBAR, Form 8938, and this is an area where the IRS likes to shoot jaywalkers. something we tell everyone who has a foreign entity. Expect your tax bill to go way up because of the reporting requirements. There are a lot of them. Not doing the reporting requirements correctly has lots of fines, and these are typically five-figure and greater fines from the IRS that are very hard to get out of. And these were, by the way, it's not the IRS who has set this up, this draconian regime, it's Congress. So don't blame the IRS, blame your local Congress critters. But I really am just scratching the surface here. There are tons of requirements, and this is where the IRS likes to shoot jaywalkers.
Very good. Thank you, Russell Fox. Always informative. Everybody hates taxes, but getting it done right is money in the bank. So thank you very much for coming on our show again.
Quite welcome.
After your tax season is over, we'll get you back in May or so, and then again at the end of the year. Very useful information for our guests. So at the end of our show, we typically have a recommended portion where the co-host and sometimes the guest gives something outside of Gambling with an Edge material that would be useful for our listeners to know. So, Richard, you're first. Do you have a recommended for our audience today?
Yeah, what I've been enjoying is the YouTube videos of Sal Piacente. And Sal is a casino consultant. He consults mostly on cheating things, but he's also a magician and also a memory expert. So there are lots of videos of him on YouTube. That's kind of what I've been geeking out on. So that's my recommendation. I'll put a link in the show notes. His name is Sal Piacente.
And Russell, before the show, you were telling Richard and me about a restaurant that you like.
Yes, there's a restaurant that, unfortunately, I debated about recommending this on the air because I love it. And I don't want it to get overrun, although they are about to move to a larger location, same general place. It's a restaurant called Nitaya's Secret Kitchen. Nitaya spelled N-I-T-T-A-Y-A. And it's in the west side of Las Vegas. It's Lake Mead and Rampart, for those familiar. Old Summerlin. Old is very relative in Las Vegas, dates to 1993. And it is a wonderful Thai restaurant. I think it's a little better than Lotus of Siam, but, you know, others will argue that. But it is a great Thai restaurant, and its lunch pricing is not expensive at all.
Aha.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you again, Russell. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit a royal flush, everybody. Good day.